Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and my guest today is Michelle Eisenberg, and I'm very excited to have her. Many of you probably know her mom, Cheryl Benjamin. Cheryl and I were childhood friends. We lived next door to each other in Vereeniging and used to climb over our fence to play with each other. So she certainly has got many of you through maths, high maths, at she's a friend of mine still. So I have her daughter, Michelle Eisenberg. And I saw Cheryl just the other day, and we were talking about at a friend's a birthday, a mutual friend, and we were talking about what our Jewish community do to reach out to other communities in our country. And she mentioned that her daughter, Michelle, does an amazing lot of work with disadvantaged children. Michelle, welcome. I will just say that you completed your postgrad accreditation in orthopedic manipulative therapy. You have your BSc physiotherapy, and you also went to Barcelona and you studied a certification course in 3D treatment of scoliosis, and according to the Schroth principles, which you'll tell us about. Also, the Barcelona Scoliosis Physical Therapy School, you are trained in many modalities of physio. Where would you like to start? I think, actually, I'm not going to give you much of a choice right there. I would like to first say that we dedicate today's program to other hostages still in the dungeons in Gaza. And I'd like to especially dedicate it to Keith and Aviva Siegel, who are both released hostages and are talking around the world at the moment with great, great courage. I dedicate this to them, and please God, our hostages will be released soon and peace can reign in the Middle East. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
Tell me a bit about your Mandela Day, what you, the proposal that you put forward for
yes,
it.
Yes, all right. I was very lucky with that. A patient came in who had grown up in a township called Kagiso on the outskirts of Krugersdorp. And she was telling me that she goes back into this township and she tries to find kids who've got good academic potential and get them into tertiary education. And she was hosting for Mandela's Day a medical day. So as she said that, I took advantage of the opportunity to say, I want to come as well. And she was having doctors there looking at basically health. They had visual screening. They had dentists screening their teeth. And she said, well, you can come with pleasure, but what are you going to do and what are you going to screen?
Was this for a group of youngsters?
It was for a school that went all the way from grade R up to high school. But by the end of it, we'd seen so many children, and I think I got to see up to the children in grade 5. And I had put this proposal together that I actually went, when she said it, I went home that evening and I thought, well, let me see what you would screen disadvantaged children for in a school who don't have access to medical care.
We're going to get back to that in a moment.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
I'm back with, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Michelle Eisenberg, and she is telling us about a proposal that she put forward on for Mandela Day to go into a school, and she was in the middle of telling us the ages and where the school was. So just go back a little bit to say where the school was and the ages, please.
This school was in Kagiso, which is out Krugersdorp way, and it was a school for children all the way from grade R up to, I think, grade 10. And we didn't get to see all the children because there were so many, and we got as far apart through it as we could. But what happened was I had to put a proposal together to see what a physiotherapist would screen in a school like that. So I went on to Google to research, and there wasn't very much available. These kind of screenings are not done. So I put together a screen. We looked at spinal deformities, scoliosis and kyphosis. And then we also, I went and I put down lower limb deformities, often in children, whether at congenital with birth or in utero, they will develop lower limb deformities. There's one called coxa valga and coxa vara, where the hips roll in too much and or roll out too much, and it changes the angulation in the hips and affects their walking later on, their muscle development. It affects the ability of the pelvis to move, because the pelvis is going to have to adapt to a deformity like that. We looked at...
Is that easy to pick up?
It is. There are ways to screen for all these things. I was just in the situation that we couldn't screen all these children. They brought me big classes. So what I did and what I put on the proposal was to look at motor skills development and look for motor delays. So we took these big groups and I did little motor skills exercises for them. They loved it and they found it a lot of fun. And while we were doing that, we pulled out the children who were struggling and who couldn't get there, those that couldn't sit in cross sitting, those that couldn't lay on their tummies and arch up all the way, showing restrictions in certain movements. Those children that had coordination issues or balance issues, and we pulled out those children and assessed them further. And luckily, there was an occupational therapist there also. And those that I pulled out, she was trying to assess the children one-on-one. Those that we pulled out, we sent to her and we assessed further.
I saw you having great fun doing it, by the way. I saw a little video of you doing with them jumping up. You were showing them how to jump forward, and they were having great fun, and so were you. And
I think I jumped up and down with them for almost 3 solid hours. We did side shuffle exercises. We made sure that they could crouch down all the way and jump up from there. There's a whole scope of exercises, and they're lovely to do and very important. And there is without doubt a link between movement patterns and academic delays as well. So to find these delays, it gives us a lovely connection. There is another thing that we look at, I didn't have time, called primitive reflexes. So primitive reflexes are little protective reflexes that babies have in their first year. And as the year goes on, they're overridden and the children start to learn how to move, and their brain develops a body map, and they realize where their hands are, bring their hands to their center line, they learn to roll, they learn to lift. But for certain reasons, for many reasons, these primitive reflexes are not overridden properly. And that later affects children developing, reaching certain developmental milestones. And it affects their academic ability as well. It wasn't a field of mine, but had I had a chance to bring in another physiotherapist, which we're looking to next year, to find a simple way to assess these primitive reflexes and that they've been overridden, we can do so much more with this proposal and with assessing kids as the years go.
So once you had assessed them, did you then assess them further, or do you then refer them?
I did, and it was all very last minute, so we put it together. I wrote a script for those that we had problems for. We put their name and age, and underneath it we put the problems or the limitations that we found, and a possible diagnosis or reason for it. And we're looking at doing it through public sector, and if if necessary, we'll look to go into seeing if we can get doctors from private sector to help. Children with severe scoliosis, we wrote scripts for the kyphosis scoliosis full x-rays.
Tell me and our listeners what those terms actually imply.
A kyphosis and a scoliosis are spinal deformities. They're structural deformities, and they're three-dimensional. So it's not just a sideways curve. The vertebra rotates, the vertebra becomes misshapen. And it usually, most common form is that it starts from 10 years upwards, which is called adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. And we do get cases where we get juvenile or even neonatal scoliosis, which start in utero or start earlier on. In the years that children are growing is our time period where we have the best option to get the vertebra to grow more symmetrically, because it's caused by asymmetrical growth in the vertebra. And as soon as that happens, a child is pulled off its axis by the scoliosis. It causes a cycle of compressing the one side of the vertebra and distracting the other. And that damages the growth plate and makes the vertebra grow further in that deformity. And that's why in those years, till the end of their growth, to put them in a brace which gives them the best torso symmetry and decompresses the curve, as well as doing exercises to decollapse the curve against gravity, to give us axial lengthening in the spine. And what we do as well is we use the rib cage and breathing to derotate the vertebra. We're looking for a symmetrical torso where all the muscles are expanded and can work properly, can limit that curve getting worse, and to an extent give us correction. And we get other deformities that we look at that are in the front of the chest as well as the back. It's not just in the back. And their chest deformities called pectus excavatum and pectus carinatum that are part of it. And there is lots of lovely work that is being done with that.
We're going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Michelle Eisenberg. And if you'd like to send any messages, please do so on 061 895 1019. This is 101.9 High FM, and you're listening to the Finding Human program. Now, Michelle, this went out saying that you were coming on, and that I think we called it, because you had it in one of your papers, Movement is Medicine. And I got quite a few questions that I need to ask you. So many people said that they are worrying about anti-Semitism, family in Israel, in England, in Australia, South Africa. And it's the world at war with itself, causing sleep disturbances. So some people said they couldn't sleep, they couldn't get comfortable, stiff neck, headaches, TMJ, the joint clicking. I must admit, I'm embarrassed to eat in front of anyone if I've got to chew, because I'm clicking so badly. I could almost join that click song, you know. And I was asked, would I please ask Michelle, does she see a rise in problems like headaches, TMJ joints being stiff and just stiff all over, and sleep disturbances?
I do think we're seeing an increase. There is so much going on in the world. We've gone through so many things recently, from the pandemic all the way to big wars through the world over in the Jewish community. We're trying to make sense in the madness in the world of what everybody's interpreting the situation. We trying to keep our identity strong. And the one thing we do talk about with posture is that your posture translates your thoughts and emotions. And at the same time as that, your muscles react to that. Muscles can stay in a state in chronic contraction and not remember how to soften and relax. And there's specific exercise patterns that teach you to take the muscle, to wind the muscle into its full contraction, and then to learn to slowly over lengthen it so your body can be aware of the tension that it's holding. Besides that, there are so many aspects to posture. Posture is a complete science. But another tissue that we talk about with that, and I think it's research-based, is the connective tissue that wraps your body. The connective tissue, the fascia, is continuous throughout your body. It forms a body stocking underneath your skin. It eventually becomes deep layers that makes the pleural sac around the lung, or the peritoneal sac where all your internal organs run, the pericardial sac around your heart. It wraps the muscles and it insulates every single nerve. But the connective tissue is meant to store your past experiences and past trauma. And they even say to an extent that is generational, trauma that your parents have gone through or belief systems that your parents have gone through get stored in your body. It affects our breathing patterns. It affects the way we move, and it affects our spatial awareness, how we are in space, where we are. So posture is a way that we can tap into that emotional side, and therapeutic exercises also.
You know, it's just as you're saying that and mentioning how it's showing up. I walked into a meeting the other day, and everyone's body language was shown in their posture, quite honestly. You could see some people with very tense jaws, other people hunched forward, looking years older than they actually were. And it's quite amazing how just looking at a person, you can pick up so much by how their posture is, how they're walking. Do you find that? Is that true?
Yes, I do. And we can use that also to analyze movement patterns and analyze posture and even analyze gait, the way people work. There's a lot of geometry in it, but without doubt it translates the thoughts and emotions. The way we walk, yes, and the way we move. We've got to be confident. We look at weight shift from one leg to the other. Walking actually is divided into vertical and horizontal walking. We're looking for rotation coming all the way through the body. We also use, there's something called ocular motor function, that you're confident to move your eyes without your head moving, that you don't get dizzy, you're not too reliant on your eyes to keep your body stable, that you can close your eyes and use the little proprioceptors, which are little receptors in your muscles and your feet and all the muscles in your body, to know where you are in space without actually seeing. And your posture can, it can show your confidence, it can show so many different aspects of how people read you.
So with people who sent messages saying, please get a tip on how to lie properly in bed and have a comfortable night's sleep while clenching my jaw. That was the one message.
All right. But you know what? Just because you said that, because sleeping position to me is not one sleeping position all night. We have to be able to roll over comfortably, and we need to be able to to have enough support from our cushions. But I just want to speak about that tension in the jaw, because the work around the jaw and craniomandibular work is also so important, and it's the start of posture. So the start of posture and the strongest muscle in our bodies should be our tongues. Your tongue is meant to rest on your bony top palate with your lip seal that you're breathing in and out through your mouth. It shouldn't be. You often see children who've got not enough postural tone with their tongues hanging out of their mouths and their mouths open. That is not a correct position, because breathing through your nose and your tongue position is the start of it. Huh. So in actual fact, for sleeping, that's the most important thing, is that you have your lips sealed and you naturally can breathe in and out through your nose.
So just
while
on
you're
that
sleeping.
Point, what happens if you've got a mouth guard? So your tongue is not resting on the top palate, it's resting on the mouth guard.
That is fine, as long as it's not sitting in the bottom of your mouth. It can sit against a mouth guard, although a lot of them, it's just the way it doesn't properly disrupt them. It doesn't disrupt them. We want the tongue to be strong and to be able to work for speech and for swallowing and to propel food to the back of your throat. And it's also part of the scope of physiotherapy, is to work with these kinds of things. It's not just the big muscles you see.
Now, one of the other questions that came through was somebody saying that her mom had a stroke and her one side was affected.
A hemiplegia.
Yeah, okay. And I was wondering, because I was looking up when I was trying to get a bit more educated on your subject, I was looking up on muscle memory and what it refers to. And it said that it's the ability to repeat a specific bodily movement automatically without conscious thought, often after repeated practice. So would this be lost in a stroke like that? That the muscle memory is not remembering?
Yes, depending which part of the brain is affected. So there would be a bleed or lack of oxygen to one side of the brain, causing part of a dead tissue in the one side, and it will affect the opposite side of the body. But there is a lot of work with it will cause a spasticity in a lot of the muscles. So the muscles will shorten and tighten. Ah. So you do lose those patterns which were so wired into your brain already, and we need the relearning of those movement patterns again, and to try to normalize the tone. So it affects the ability to fully lengthen your arm. It affects the control around your shoulder blade. It affects your walking and your balance on your leg. It does affect those things. And part of the remediation of that is to relearn motor patterns and use other parts of the brain to rewire that.
Okay, that makes sense. So what happens then with a brain injury if someone is paralyzed from the neck down but does have certain movements eventually in their feet, their toes?
That is an injury lower down in the spinal cord, which is the wiring, that is the continuation of the brain. And depending whether it's a complete or incomplete injury, a lot of that paralysis is it becomes a lifelong injury, and a lot of that cannot be properly, that you never get the strength back in those muscles. You've got either complete paralysis or paresis. It also affects everything from that level of the spine downwards. Mm-hmm. The lower the injury, the more that is retained. If that injury is in the neck, injuring the spinal cord in the neck, it affects everything from there down, the arms, the shoulders, the legs. It also affects bladder control and bowel control. all those functions, anything, any of the wiring from that level downwards gets affected.
So the muscle memory then would not
help. Not for those muscles. Any retained muscles can be used, and we've got to, that we learn patient, we teach patients a paraplegic when they, where the injury is lower in the spine from the thoracic spine downwards, we use the strength in the shoulder girdle, residual strength in the shoulder girdle to teach them to transfer from one surface to the other, to learn to roll over and bring their legs with. It's an adaption, and it's a lifelong adaption. Mm. And they need special equipment in their homes. They need to the muscles shorten and cause contractures in their joints, so they need to they need regular physiotherapy to maintain the joint range of motion. Mm. They've lost their sensation from that level downwards, so they've got to learn to relieve pressure so they don't get pressure sore from sitting for too long. There's adapted cars that are needed. It's a lifelong adaption process with missing certain muscles.
So what about if chronically tight muscles?
Chronically tight muscles, this is something I've been looking into quite a bit.
Especially with all the stress.
Chronically tightened muscles need to learn to go from full lengthening to full contraction. And it's got to do with the overlap of the muscle fibers. So we always used to talk about stretching the muscles and lengthening them out. And it is important, but there are movement patterns called pandiculation, which shorten the muscle, wind the muscle up into their full shortened position. So your brain is aware that that's that tight position you're stuck in, and then learn to unwind them from that. And that often is more what balances the muscle length, the optimal muscle length that we need, and the optimal muscle tension. They're lovely exercises, and they work with the wiring in the brain.
Now, funny enough, there was also something that I actually learned about doing this research was pandiculation, and how if you see a cat or a dog stretching, which they do as they stand up, often they've been sleeping, and they stretch their whole body. And it's said, you know, that we also should be doing that when we get out of bed in the morning after a sleep or after sitting for too long, stretching our whole body and feeling everything relaxing as we are stretching.
It is. It's an unwinding movement that should naturally happen, although these patterns to learn them are fantastic.
What sort of patterns?
They call pandiculation patterns, and the science behind them is excellent. You can see how your movements are not just isolated to one muscle. Your movements flow from one muscle through your body. So it teaches you these spiral movement patterns. And any exercises, whether they're exercises to strengthen you, they're exercises for lengthening muscles, they therapeutic patterns that you have to do for your posture, a little bit of practice, repetition, rewires your brain and over slowly over time alters your posture, corrects your posture. Mm. Posture is very much about your awareness in space, where your body is in space, and decollapsing yourself against gravity. Breathing and the strength in your diaphragm is also so much part of your posture.
I see you also do cranial sacral work. What would you do for that? What would happen that they would be needing that?
I incorporate it into my physiotherapy. I went on a physiotherapy course years ago, and they showed us a few of the techniques. And I think I like this. So craniosacral therapy is actually an osteopathic technique. It treats the deepest layer of this connective tissue that wraps the brain and wraps the spinal cord, makes the dural sleeve all the way down the vertebral canal. It connects the cranium, the head, and the sacrum at the bottom of the spine. Uh-huh. And it can be used to treat the continuous nerve network in your body. And when I did the first module in the craniosacral work, the anatomical base behind it was fantastic. It uses techniques to mobilize the cranial bones and all the way along the body. It's very anatomically based, and to me it fits in beautifully with my physiotherapy. I don't do dedicated just craniosacral techniques. I incorporate it into my hands-on work as I go.
I think that sounds wonderful. I mean, I just know that when I go to the hairdresser and they're rinsing my hair and then they massage my head, I could stay there the entire day and have them massage my head. It's very, very soothing.
It is soothing. It
and
is
comforting,
soothing.
You
yes.
know.
Yes.
It really is. Now tell me, Michelle, about Barcelona. What was that 3D movement that you learned?
So that is a method to correct and treat scoliosis and kyphosis, which are your three-dimensional spinal deformities, most of which are being developmental. Come on, they're from adolescence usually, or even younger. And what it does is it actually causes it deforms and misshapes the vertebrae in the spine. So we want to decollapse the spine as best as possible to correct it. It's not only about treating the spine. It's about treating the entire torso and the rib and the body, because the ribs can be used, and breathing and expanding and filling the lungs can be used to derotate the most rotated vertebrae in the scoliosis pattern.
We're going to get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Michelle Eisenberg, and we're talking about various modalities of physiotherapy. She has so much information at her fingertips because of courses she's been doing. And we were talking about that, your course in Barcelona. What is the, is it Schroth?
Schroth, it's a method of correcting and decollapsing a scoliosis curve and creating as much length against gravity in the spine to allow this to give you the best symmetry and load the spine equally, the torso and the spine equally. It started in the early 1900s in Germany, and has over the years evolved, and there are new methods of it. And
why is it called 3D?
Three-dimensional because a spinal curve is three-dimensional. The vertebrae, you've got an imbalance in the body from front to back, from side to side. We need to balance the shoulders, the rib cage, and over the pelvis so that we've got the most best distribution of forces, that we're not loading the spine and the muscles can work efficiently. And for that reason, and then also the vertebra rotates on a transverse axis. So it's done in three axes. Exactly like you learned, my mom will be very impressed with this. It's got a lot of geometry in it and force vectors. We want to correct the force vectors. So we correct the curve on the X, Y, and Z axis.
Right.
With now, specific
give
exercises.
Give me that in lay terms.
We want to expand the I'll give it to you from the rib cage. When you breathe, we want to expand the rib cage from side to side, from front to back in a 360 degree angle, so that we can get the best correction in the spine. Often you'll see people sitting with their heads forward. Mm. So what we want to do is bring the head upwards and backwards so it's sitting over the axis of the spine. You'll see people stand a lot where they shift their pelvis forward. So they're standing with the pelvis shifted forward. They're collapsing into their spine. The heart and the thoracic spine shift backwards and the head shifts forward to counterbalance that. So we want to balance those blocks from front to the rear. And we want to make sure from side to side that everything is aligned. So those are the three axes in the spine.
Okay, that makes sense, actually. It really does. Now, I know that you enjoy yoga and dance.
Yes.
I must admit that the other day, my husband loves music. And I can always tell by his body posture what sort of day he's had. But as long as the music is playing, he's moving. So I was looking out our bedroom window and I saw him going across the garden, dancing away to his music. And and I thought, how wonderful, what wonderful body movement, you know, in the dance. And you can pick up so much just by the happiness of music and dance, can't you?
Yes.
So how would you teach people to enjoy those movements, those spontaneous movements when you hear a good music?
You know what? It's teaching them movement patterns, not just simple, boring movements, but you drawing from all these things. The ancient Eastern practices, yoga and Tai Chi, have an amazing wisdom of body movements without having at that stage done big dissections. How they knew that the muscles and the body works along trains and don't work individually, work together, and movements spiral. So I use a lot of those things in my work. I use like remedial yoga. I use quite a few of the dance methods.
Give me an example.
There's a lot of movement patterns that come from, even if we look at African dance, where they teach you to, if you're going to jump and come up, to use the floor, to press down into the floor. So you put the tendons at the back of the legs on length, and that gives you the length to jump up. Huh. Weight shift and patterning and moving from your heels, spiraling your feet, pivoting your feet, using some of those patterns in my work to teach people how to move through their feet and how to follow up their body has worked quite nicely for me.
I'm sure it sounds like it. It actually sounds very, very healing. You know, one of the other things that I was looking at was this muscle memory and how examples of it would be like typing on a computer, playing the piano. Now those, or riding a bike, would you say that you never forget those tools?
You know what, I don't think so. It's developmentally through a process from little. These are your developmental steps. Once you've learned them, they become automatic. They're stored in the muscles and not only in the brain. So you don't have to overthink them. And to an extent, they do become wired into your muscles the more you practice them.
So is it actually your muscle or your memory? What would it be?
It's muscle memory, but it reaches a point once you're... To start with, you need your brain to teach you those patterns. So you can see somebody learning to ride a bicycle or learning a dance combination. It's slow and it's awkward to start with. And once they get it, the muscles remember that pattern and they can do it without using that overthinking to do it.
Okay, I remember in Vereeniging, and we used to go skiing a lot as a little girl, water skiing, and there was one thing that I just could never do, and riding a bicycle also. So obviously I don't have a particularly good brain for those sort of movements, but I remember somebody, which I thought was pretty old at the time, they were in their 50s, and they joined us down at the river to go skiing. And he said he hadn't skied for something like 30 years. So in other words, since he was about 20. And I thought he was heck of a old. And I could not believe that I couldn't get up on the skis. And I was about 18 or whatever then. But he was up on the skis and off he went skiing. I was actually a bit furious about that one.
It is. And that's why for children and even for adults to incorporate those simple equipment, like skipping ropes, yes, hula hoops, little their patterns that you do with bouncing balls, are so important because they teach those movement patterns and they help with the development of the brain.
So just now you were showing me a photograph of a little child who was holding onto bars, which it looked almost like a ladder, I suppose you could say.
Yes, yes.
And you had her, you were holding the bottom of her spine.
Yes.
Now, why were you doing that? We'll get back to
your
answer now.
Because in the...
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue and I'm back with Michelle Eisenberg and our time is going very quickly. Where did we end there?
We ended with the pictures of the wall bars,
yes,
that you said, which is...
And you were holding the little girl's spine at the bottom.
Yes, yes. So I think I showed you quite a few pictures. Those are our children who've got quite severe scoliosis. So we've got them in braces and we're doing the decollapsing Schroth exercises to reshape their spines as best as possible and teach them methods so that they can do it at home, which is difficult with adolescent children. Compliance is an issue. But the wall bars are equipment that's been used for a long time. And we do hanging and semi-hanging exercises so that we can get as much axial lengthening between the vertebrae and make space and as much symmetry in the spine so that we can get them to breathe into the lungs on the concave side and compress the and decompress the curve. It allows the tissues and everything that gets shortened, the muscles and the connective tissue, to lengthen on that side and to strengthen the muscles with as best symmetry as we can and to give them an awareness of the corrections that their spine need that they can maintain it as best as possible during the day.
Would that be more or less the pendiculation that you're talking about?
No, those are not pendiculate. The scoliosis exercises don't use the pendiculation. And I have tried once or twice to use them in it. And I saw another physiotherapist overseas trying. But the scoliosis exercises don't work on that. They work on getting torso symmetry and lengthening the shorted structures in the concavity of the curve, the concave side.
So the sooner you can do that, the better age-wise.
Yes, especially in those growing years, because if you can give them the best possible symmetry that the growth plates in the vertebrae are loaded evenly, equally, you can limit the amount of that the curve will progress because these curves do progress. We actually calculate the risk for them to progress, and get the best possible symmetry in the spine while they're growing.
Gee whiz, that's amazing. It really is. Now, going back to your Mandela Day project that you were doing, once you've found the problems, do you then refer to the medical side to take over orthopods or
That's what we did this time. We had to decide what we were going to do with what we found. So we wrote scripts for these children, and they're going to be taken into the public sector hospital to see if they can access treatment for them for those things. We did find a little girl with a coxa-valga deformity where the hips are rolled in structurally, and that eventually needs a surgery called a derotation femoral osteotomy.
Now, would her knees be knocked?
Her knees are knocked, her hips are knocked,
her
she can't properly
in.
Straighten her legs. And all the muscles shorten and contract in that position. It affects her walking. It affects her sitting. She had, when we found this, we actually found out she had other existing problems. So it became more complicated. But that surgery, it needs x-rays, and hopefully a child like that can be seen by the pediatric orthopedic specialists in the public sector hospitals.
So you would refer?
Yes, and refer and see if we could get the best help in that case. If not, there could be a possibility to look if private sector specialists could assist as a donation or as part of their community service work.
That's wonderful. So what does that do to your own soul when you are helping children who can't afford to have medical care and proper medical care? How does that affect you?
You know what, from so many directions, firstly, working in Sandton, we see patients who have access to every drop of medical care they need. They can have any investigations, their parents are aware and watching and can see if there are issues and bring them in for treatment or bring them in to be assessed. Here you're dealing with children whose parents don't have access to that and who would possibly fall through the system. So to be able to contribute and give back is so important. And also in these kind of situations, children in underprivileged circumstances, you often see different problems to which you'll see in those in the private sector. Mm-hmm. So it's good for everybody involved. It's good for the children that can be screened. It's good for those of us who are so lucky to be able to go in and be in a different situation, because we learn every day from that.
Absolutely. Now, I'm being told to wrap up, but I hope that you will go on with this incredible work. I also just wanted to mention, I said earlier that, you know, as Jewish organizations helping the underprivileged, there's also that Kolenu, which was running, had a wonderful webinar on last night, on how we treat the boys in our lives. And I would suggest that people go and listen to that. Can you give out your number, Michelle, before we end?
With pleasure.
Okay.
Must I give my number?
Yes, please.
083-45-0030.
Just say that again.
083-45-0030.
Please get hold of Michelle if you need any help. We're going to be ending, but you're going to be listening to a lovely song by Judy Erwick, who's a good friend of mine in Australia, called Doing My Exercises, and it's on her album. And for children, there's beautiful ones from Judy and Wendy Fine, Child of Today, and your kids would, all the kids in your care would enjoy them. Thank you, Craig, and thank you so much, Michelle. I really enjoyed being with
you. Pleasure. Thank you.